This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for 18th of April 2019. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 18th of April, which this week have been edited by Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Jane Thomas. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithfull. The main headlines this week are St Cross Car Park Fury, Veteran Pub Landlord Calls Time on Tenure, and Alan Titchmarsh sinks first spade into hospice garden. To you for the first headline.
St Cross Car Park Fury. A storm has erupted over plans for a car park on a historic meadow on the edge of Winchester. The Hospital of St Cross wants to build a 57-space car park on St Cross Park, close to the medieval almshouses. The hospital, a charitable almshouse founded 1136, says the car park would cater for the events that it hosts, such as weddings, memorial services, fetes and concerts. It proposes to put down a form of mesh that allows grass to grow through, but can also support vehicles and stock-proof, fencing. No tarmac is proposed. But in the last few days, the application has sparked furore from local people, with more than 50 often angry objections. Emotions have been heightened because no one knew about the scheme, as the orange statutory notices were said not to have been put up until recently. The reaction has been so strong that the hospital, a charitable almshouse founded in 1136, yesterday withdrew the plan for public consultation. In a statement it said, "In recent years, the Hospital of St Cross has become a popular location for weddings, baptisms, funerals and various community events. These events make a significant financial contribution towards the maintenance of the buildings each year and ensuring a sustainable future. However, there are relatively limited public transport services available which provide regular, efficient service to St Cross and no service connecting to the park and ride. Significantly, there is insufficient car parking available on site to cater for such events. Advice provided by Historic England in 2014 acknowledged that the existing parking arrangements are unsatisfactory and a longer-term solution is necessary. It is disappointing to see words like vandalism being used by no doubt well-meaning individuals, but with little insight to the difficulties facing the trustees in achieving an appropriate balance. Far from ignoring the community, the trustees are seeking to make provision to ensure the surrounding roads are not congested by event parking. Indeed, one of the groups that will benefit most from the car park every Sunday are the local parishioners of St. Faith's. Regrettably, it appears as though there has been a degree of misinformation circulated in response to the proposals, which has contributed to a higher level of objection than was anticipated from sections of the community. In response, the trustees have taken the decision to withdraw the application in favour of holding a public consultation, which will be held in due course. This will enable relevant and accurate information to be discussed with the community." Among the objectors was Dr. Marjorie Huntley, a teacher at Winchester College of Grange Road, St. Cross, who said, "This is outrageous. It looks like the application has been snuck through so far. They want to bring in tourists and have applied to build the car park under the cloak that it will be easier for ambulances to attend. Now, I live in St. Cross, and that's a load of rubbish. Ambulances have always gone through the front gate. To even propose building on the water meadows is ridiculous. The increase in traffic would be a nightmare and the public would probably think it's okay to use it instead of the park and ride. George Summers Smith, architect of Ranelagh Road, wrote, "The landscape in which this new car park is proposed has remained undeveloped for hundreds of years. Its open character is an essential part of the unique setting of St. Cross Church as it is approached from the south. A proper analysis of the importance of this landscape is lacking from the application documents. It is likely to be part of a formal landscape designed by John Nash in the early 19th century and also inspired John Keats' poem Ode to Autumn. St. Cross Church is famous nationally and internationally for its unspoilt setting, and it would be a tragedy for the city of Winchester if cars were to be parked in this highly sensitive location."
And it's over to Noel for the second headline story.
Yes, veteran pub landlord calls time on tenure. When Winchester's longest-serving landlord opened his pub in 1973, punters would pay 11 pence for a pint. Now, 46 years on, Mike Sinker of the Baker's Arms is set to call last orders when his leasehold expires at the end of the month. The 76-year-old, who lives in Romsey, when not staying above the pub, will make way for a new watering hole when the building is reclaimed by its owners, EI Group. Mike, a former chairman of the Licensed Victuallers Association, said, "It's a bit tough, and as you can imagine, it was very difficult when I first had to make the decision. But now I'm used to the idea. I had the option to renew, but I'm 76 now and I don't need to run it anymore. I've had a wonderful time in this lovely city, and although I wasn't born and bred here, it does feel like home." Mr. Sinker had opened other pubs during his stay, all of which have closed, including the farmhouse in Chandler's Ford, but described the Baker's Arms as his base camp. He now looks to enjoy a relaxed retirement, but says he will spend time volunteering for various projects in the local area. He said, "I used to have a villa in Spain, but I've sold that. So I won't be living abroad. I live in Romsey, so as you can imagine, there's lots of things I can get involved with. I want to help with nature reserves particularly." In his long-spanning career, Mr. Sinker has seen many changes within the industry, including the rising price of alcohol. "There have been massive changes, as you can imagine. Obviously, beer consumption has increased and prices have gone up. But it was nice to see more and more ladies visit the pub as the years went by, and the introduction of food was something I quite enjoyed, because that never used to be the norm." He added, "As a non-smoker, when the no-smoking rule came about, I thought it was much better. But as with anything, I've had to adapt. It's all part of the experience." A 2-day send-off party will be held on April the 20th and 21st, and Mr. Sinker and his wife Lynn will officially leave the pub on April the 29th. Anyone is welcome to join them for a drink.
And it's over to Jane for the third headline story,
which is Alan Titchmarsh sinks first spade into hospice garden. The campaign to build a hospice in Winchester has enlisted the support of Britain's best-known gardener. Alan Titchmarsh, who is best known for hosting the BBC Garden Makeover series Ground Force, visited Burrell House at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, RHCH, the site of the planned hospice, to put the first spade in the ground in what will become the Winchester Hospice Garden. Alan, who is also the Chancellor of Winchester University and who lives near Alton, said, "It's a wonderful opportunity to have this space within the grounds of Winchester Hospice to create a place where patients and their loved ones can spend time together enjoying the outdoors. The reason I'm a gardener is because I feel better when I'm in the garden, and I hope that those who will use the garden will feel the same. It's easy to visualise what a fantastic space this will be for patients and their families, and I really look forward to seeing this space transform. I wish everyone involved with the Winchester Hospice the best as they continue to fundraise to create this hospice for the local community." As well as putting his green fingers to work, Alan was also shown around Burrell House. As previously reported, a £3 million fundraising campaign is currently underway to transform the building on Romsey Road into a much-needed 10-bed hospice and palliative care hub, providing specialist care for patients. Nick Vaughan, chairman of the fundraising charity's Board of Trustees, said, "It was fantastic to welcome Alan Titchmarsh and representatives from the University of Winchester and Hillier Nurseries to have a look around Burrell House. I would like to thank them all for their support and for taking time to hear all about Winchester Hospice. The garden will be a peaceful place for patients and their families and friends, and having Alan here today has got us off to the best possible start. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the RHCH and will manage the Winchester Hospice, said, "We are all thrilled to have received Alan's support and to have had the opportunity to tell him why Winchester Hospice will be such a vital addition to the services we are able to offer to the local community. Winchester Hospice will enable us to provide outstanding care and support to patients and their families at what is a very difficult time, and we know that providing a special outdoor space is just one of the ways we can do this. As well as providing inpatient care, Winchester Hospice will provide a hub for specialist palliative care in the community throughout outpatient services, therapies and caring for people in their own homes. As there is no hospice currently located in the city of Winchester, patients with life-limiting illnesses and their families can often spend a considerable amount of time travelling back and forth from their homes to receive care or to visit a loved one." And this is accompanied by a photograph of Alan Titchmarsh and the clinical matron Maddie Thompson, both with white helmets on, looking around the new site with windows propped up against the wall and obviously planning what could be the most beautiful possible garden for this excellent hospice.
And that concludes the headline stories. We'll continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, editorial comment, question and answer my Winchester, and Ben Belgarum diary. And we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Culverson. Dorothy Mary Culverson, following a short illness and peacefully. Hyatt, Thomas Hyatt, peacefully at home in Ferndown, aged 85. Crone, Paul David, known as David Crone, peacefully in Yeovil, aged 69. Lil, Joan Mary Lil, peacefully. And Ling, John Ling, again peacefully, aged 86. Randall, Ronald John Randall, aged 75. Seeger, Valerie Seeger, aged 93. Sherfield, Stanley James Sherfield, peacefully aged 89. Stewart, June Denise Shaffy Stewart, peacefully at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice, aged 72. Tucker, Mary Eileen Tucker, aged 87. And finally, Vellacott, Patricia Vellacott, peacefully aged 86. And now Jane's got Christian comment.
And Christian comment this week is the ultimate scapegoat in Holy Week. This week is Holy Week. For Christians, it is though the earth stands still, waiting for the end of Lent that we began on Ash Wednesday with plans and hopes of prayer, fasting and acts of charity to prepare us for this great moment. Now we wait, pray and act out through our liturgies the final days of the Last Supper, trial and crucifixion of Jesus our Lord. Then we celebrate the joy and good news of his resurrection, when we know that God cannot be killed, he does not die, but his light shines on for our hope and salvation for all of us. Today, my lectionary gives the Old Testament prophecy from Isaiah that says, "Islands, listen to me, pay attention, remotest peoples. The Lord before me called before I was born. From my mother's womb he pronounced my name." And concludes with the words of hope for everyone. "I will make you the light of the nation, so that my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth." Isaiah 49, verses 1 and 6. This scripture calls on all people, even remotest people, to pay attention to the one who was called before he was born to rescue us and show us how to live as our Creator, his Father, intended. I have been thinking a lot recently about blame and scapegoating. You must have noticed it too. Our political problems have brought out the natural human tendency to find someone responsible and deride them. We all imagine we could do it better, and perhaps we could. But when someone is in the midst of intractable and complex problems, it is hard to find the way out of the maze. For those not in the maze, but looking down on its paths, the way out is obvious, and it is frustrating that our shouts of, "Oh, this way," are not heard by the people who are lost and bewildered. Jesus was, of course, a scapegoat, the victim of political machinations and then all that crowd behaviour that called for his blood. It began with a kind and healing act, the raising of Lazarus. His ministry was teaching, healing, and listening to God's voice. Jesus himself wasn't dealing with intractable problems. He was teaching simple kindness, love, and charity. And then he became a problem for Pontius Pilate, who conveniently and publicly washed his hands of it all, not even bothering to find a way out of the problem presented to him. So, this week, we Christians wait in the quietness of our hearts together, and then we rejoice. But the call from Isaiah is not just for us. It is for all of you, everyone, especially those remote in body or spirit. As you see, spring arriving and the weather improving, or unfamiliar enactments of Holy Week taking place on the streets, rejoice too that you do not have to live looking out for the way out. He is here in the midst of us, and you are free to explore, especially this week. And that was from Liz Tatham.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. 16 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Contribution ignored. Karen Barrett writes, "Sir, it is usual for election candidates to receive endorsements from supporters who are happy to describe their good points in the hope of attracting votes. I was therefore amused to see that Ian Tate had taken the precaution of writing his own. He has apparently been the most outspoken and strongest supporter for more affordable housing in Winchester over the last 20 years. I wonder how certain members of all parties, to be fair, council officers, housing charities and campaigners feel about their contributions being consigned to history. I am also interested to know how Mr. Tate's commitment equates with his being the only member of the council to vote for retaining Henderson as the Silver Hill developer after the company had scrapped the original proposed provision of social housing. As for Barton Farm, the issues that led to those of us on the WCC Planning Committee rejecting Carla's application were a great deal more complex than a choice between so-called affordable housing or not. That refusal was, of course, overturned on appeal. In his new role as planning consultant, Mr. Tate is surely aware that under this Conservative government, the bias in favour of private developers has increased. It is far too easy for local decisions to be reversed by the planning inspectorate, or conditions placed on approvals related to social housing provision or financial contributions in mitigation to be amended on spurious viability grounds. As someone who grew up on a council estate, I welcome any new build the current council can manage, but it's a drop in the ocean given the scale of the housing problem nationwide. We need a change of policy, which will only be delivered by a change of government. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester, Labour candidate for St Paul Ward.
Yes, you can tell we're in election season, can't you? This is a letter from Hannah Williams, headlined claiming credit. "Sir, I am appalled that Councillor Jan Warwick and the rest of the Conservatives are continuing to claim Lib Dem environmental initiatives as their own. Winchester Liberal Democrats have been campaigning for curbside glass collection and drinking water fountains for years. It's only after the success of petitions, such as the ones by Councillor Linda Murphy and myself, that the Conservatives have jumped on the bandwagon and now pretend to care. With the release of my manifesto leaflet last week, does anyone want to take odds on what they will copy next? Hannah Williams, Sparrowgrove, Otterbourne, Lib Dem candidate for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery.
And Nick Ray writes, Remain on Rise. Sir, even though MPs cannot agree on what Brexit is amongst themselves, Ray Green, letters April 11th, points a finger of shame at writers highlighting this in the Chronicle. Shaming a small advance, perhaps, on his earlier letters telling those at large who don't share his personal interpretation of what an undefinable Brexit is to leave the country. Democratic decisions are not made on the basis of fraudulently procured votes. Mr. Green should acknowledge this. Indeed, had this been anything but an advisory referendum, it would have been annulled because of the law-breaking. Yet, Mr. Green continues to act and write like someone who, despite learning a deck of cards was rigged, is happy to pocket his winnings as a result. Taking Mr. Green's points in turn. 1. Having established lies and overspending influenced the tiny 650,000 margin in favour of Leave, a mere 16.1 million loser souls being on the other side, it is a scandal that the UK and Ray does not back annulment and a rerun. 2. Steve Brine finally at least acknowledged inherent contradictions common to all flavours of Brexit, not least the concept of the UK taking back control will paradoxically likely lead to the destruction of our United Kingdom as we know it, not just economically and socially, but geographically too. The Northern Ireland backstop being a case in point. Ray Green may not care what the will of the Scottish or North Irish people is, but I suggest he tells us what he means by the United of UK, if so. Reuters, Sunday, April the 14th, reports a YouGov opinion poll showing the UK would now vote to remain in the EU by a 12% and growing margin. Given which, I suggest that Ray, rather than hurl insults, take a long, hard look in the mirror and ask himself why he is so reluctant to back a people's vote if he's so keen to shame those who want to thwart the will of the people. And that was from Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
All is well. Councillor Guy Ashton writes, Sir, here is an outline of how the council is paying for the new sport and leisure centre in response to letters in the Chronicle on April the 11th. The construction cost is around £38 million. This is a fixed price. It would only change if the council were to alter the design. The new operator, Everyone Active, will pay the council a guaranteed annual sum, increasing with inflation once the centre is open. The minimum annual amount that Everyone Active will pay is confidential, but it is such that the revenue to the council over the life of the centre will more than cover all construction and interest costs. As a final note, the contract ensures that Everyone Active runs the centre with the aim of maximising community access. So, with fixed price construction, guaranteed minimum revenue and all costs more than covered, all is well. Councillor Guy Ashton, FCA, portfolio holder for finance, Colebrook Street, Winchester, Conservative candidate for St Michael Ward.
And on the same subject, David Simons says there is a clear choice. Sir, much as I admire Councillor Gottlieb's undoubted expertise when it comes to development, I think it's a bit rich and somewhat rancorous of him to belittle the current Conservative City Council administration in relation to the new proposed leisure centre in Bar End. If one looks at the neighbouring Eastleigh, where Liberal Democrats are in control, Winchester City Council is a paragon of virtue when it comes to finance. I make no bones about it. I am standing as a candidate for the ward of St Paul in the Conservative interest. But I am so doing so because I respect the work that the councillors have on the Conservative team have been doing. And I trust Councillor Ashton to do a good job as he has been. I don't think Councillor Godlieb's doom-mongering is justified, and I do think we should press ahead and get the leisure centre built. Let me explain why. I've followed the financing of the new sport and leisure centre at Bar End closely. In 2016, the City Council proposed the project, allocating up to £600,000 a year to support the construction costs and running expenses. In 2017, Councillor Ashton, the new councillor in charge of finance, set a new challenge to reflect the increasing financial pressure on local authorities. He said the project should not go ahead unless the revenues from the project could at least pay for itself. In 2018, a deal was done so that revenue from operators would more than cover the costs of the project over its life. Rather than Councillor Gottlieb blowing whistles, he should be waving flags and setting off fireworks to celebrate this remarkable achievement, a boon to the city without a burden on taxpayers. The voters of Winchester have a clear choice: support Councillor Gottlieb and see an end to any new leisure centre, or trust Councillor Ashton, who in my opinion has done a sterling job for the city. I say, let's go ahead for the benefit of us all. David Simons, Sleepersdale Gardens, Winchester, Conservative candidate for St Paul Ward.
And Caroline Brooke, who is the City Councillor and Portfolio Holder for Built Environment, writes, robust plans. Sir, the letter in the Chronicle on April the 4th by Mr Crask quotes the National Audit Office report on planning, and he was a little selective on the information used. Much of it was centred around the national planning picture regarding developer contributions. However, to offer a local perspective, key elements in the report also need to be aired, such as only 44.1% of local authorities have an up-to-date local plan. This includes Conservative-led Winchester City Council, which has a robust local plan and wants to update it further. In addition, all authorities should have a 5-year land supply for providing new homes, and again, Conservative-led Winchester City Council has this also. As of November 2018, the Secretary of State has challenged 15 local planning authorities who do not have an approved local plan to get their house in order. Neighbouring Lib Dem run Eastleigh is one of these 15, and many residents there are opposed to the developer free-for-all that has ruined many a field and wood. And the reason for this opposition? Not possessing a 5-year land supply and an up-to-date local plan means that councils have very little control over development in their district. Conservative-led Winchester City Council has this control. Lib Dem run Eastleigh does not. In fact, Conservative-led WCC has had 3 adopted local plans documents in the time that Lib Dem Eastleigh has had none. The council's latest local plan review will ensure housing allocations from affordable homes to student housing, plus provision of quality facilities for the elderly and disabled. It will earmark infrastructure needed while balancing this with the protection of our countryside, strategic gaps and wildlife. So far, Eastleigh's local plan sits with serious question marks over its viability, awaiting evidence before an inspector can even begin to assess it. The Conservatives' track record locally versus that of the Lib Dems regarding planning is miles apart. And that was from Caroline Brooke, City Councillor and Portfolio Holder for Built Environment, Foxtail Road, Denmead.
To be celebrated. Simon Lever writes, Sir, the station approach development has been well thought out and some reasonable concerns addressed and included in the modified layout. There will not be a dead area because there will be shops and cafes, a welcome addition. The initial plan included higher buildings, which has since been modified. The height of the buildings is a credible factor. As for the parking issue for 135 cars, there is already a massive multi-storey car park just around the corner. Further, on a long-term basis, electrically powered vehicles will be encouraged. The station itself provides car-free transport for commuters. Park and ride should be encouraged. It is very popular and could be expanded. The station approach development is critically important to Winchester's ability to attract job-creating business and will help address the critical shortage of office space. This is a most positive development and should be celebrated as a benefit to Winchester, writes Simon Lever of Juniper Close Badger Farm. And there's a picture of an artist's impression of the station approach scheme. And there's a little row of houses, which is only to the normal height of houses. And then there's a three-storey building. And then behind that, unless I'm mistaken, are a couple of five-storey or even possibly six-storey buildings.
James Anderson says, writes about spendthrift. Sir, in letters April the 4th, wannabe councillor Michael Krask presents the infrastructure levy as a free ride, a tax on developer profits. He wants to charge £57,000 infrastructure levy on every new house. Who's kidding who here? The charge becomes part of the house price and is paid by the new house buyer. The amount he proposes is little different from charging VAT on new builds. One doesn't make houses more affordable by taxing them. One would hope for wiser counsel from a potential councillor. Parish councils are already funded by 5% of our council tax. In many parishes, that amount appears to be excessive. Here in South Wanston, the parish council has such a large surplus that it's casting around for things to spend it on. Anything, it would seem. The South Wanston balances have been swollen by infrastructure levy on new Ministry of Defence homes at Worthy Down. Those homes are paid for out of our taxes, that is, as is the levy on them. These taxation arrangements look like a spendthrift's charter. James Anderson, Rights Close, South Wanston.
And Councillor Anne Weir writes, Community Champion. Sir, Mike Krask's thoughtful letter, Chronicle April the 4th, on the failure of the planning system in securing adequate developer funding for infrastructure and affordable housing, hit a nerve with former councillor Ian Tate. While lashing out at the Liberal Democrats again, Mr. Tate omitted to mention his relationship with some of the same developers, Chronicle August 2018, who are driving up land values and pricing people who work or want to retire here out of Winchester's housing market. It was for this reason, and contrary to Mr. Tate's assertion, that I and Liberal Democrat colleagues supported the council in building new homes on the former recreation ground at Westman Road in Wick, and why we campaigned to ensure these were the homes needed by the starter and downsizer households. Conservative housing and planning policies since the 1980s have favoured private landlords, who now own as much as 40% of council homes sold under right to buy nationally, and private developers who, in my ward, are riding roughshod over the planning system. Barnabas Liberal Democrat team are delighted Mike Krask, who has been campaigning hard in his own right to give residents a stronger voice in shaping development locally, has chosen to stand for election in the City Council this year. If elected, he will be a very effective champion for our community. And that was from Councillor Anne Weir, City Councillor, St Barnabas Ward, Woodstock Court, Wick, Winchester.
I thought we'd have a little letter to lighten the tone here. This is headlined High Standards, and it was written by Dennis Archdeacon. Sir, overheard in Hyde on Monday. One boy, maybe about 9, to his playmate in North Walls Park. Didn't you wear that top yesterday? Yes, I did. Why are you wearing it again today? Nice to know that standards are still riding high around here. Dennis Archdeacon, Saxon Road, Hyde, Winchester.
Sorry about that. I'll change the tone immediately. Martin Simpson writes about or warns about dangerous seed. Sir, beware the people's vote. Portrayed as an expression of true democracy, it is in fact the opposite. In proposing to take leave off the ballot paper and only allowing us to choose between remain and remain light, you really do have the seeds of the end of democracy. If we put this in general election terms, where, say, Corbyn's Labour had won an election, the equivalent would be the great and good nullifying the whole election on the grounds that Corbyn would devastate our economy, and then rerunning the general election without Labour and claiming democratic legitimacy for the subsequent winner. Personally, I find this truly shocking, and so should every true Democrat. For the sake of your children's democratic inheritance, beware the people's vote. It is a Trojan horse. Martin Simpson, Benenden Green, Oldsford.
And Mrs. Mary Simmons writes, Crystal Ball. Sir, I have today, April the 11th, received a leaflet from Winchester Conservatives which quotes their City Council election candidate, Mr. Biddle, as saying, I am so pleased that 35 affordable homes are to be built on Topfield following a detailed public consultation process. I have just checked the application status on the internet and it is still shown as current and it doesn't appear to have been discussed at today's planning committee meeting. Does Mr. Biddle have a crystal ball? And that was from Mrs. Mary Simmons, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy.
Keep the lights. Tony Stevens writes, Sir, Councillor Rutter's letter regarding street lighting in Kingsworthy is to be praised, insofar that it acknowledges that we do currently have a mini crime wave affecting the community, which is, to my mind, reason to be concerned due to the type of crime being perpetrated by burglars who are accessing property through the front door, irrespective, it would seem, whether anyone is at home. The political elite of the County Council have determined that we, the residents of Kingsworthy, should only be granted a month's reprieve as to our street lighting being switched off in the small hours. Councillor Rutter mentions that Kingsworthy Parish Council, KWPC, does own some of the street lighting in the community. Her letter suggests that KWPC are not in favour of their street lighting being switched off, and why should they be? I would therefore suggest to Kingsworthy Parish Council that if they are minded not to have their street lighting switched off during the small hours, a time when older people draw some comfort from said street lighting, then KWPC could and should insist that the County Council use their computer systems to ensure that KWPC lights are not switched off via the street lighting central management system. It was always a danger with such systems that once a politician knew there was a master switch and it could be turned on or off, that at some stage they would do just that to satisfy some other itch. So, Kingsworthy Parish Council, the ball is in your court. What will you do? Tony Stevens, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
Mike Russell Smith says there's no need to check. Sir, with reference to the letter from Ray Marsh in the Chronicle of April the 11th, some of us are surprised he had to check the Hampshire Record Office for King Alfred's views about roadworks in Jury Street, as we thought Ray was one of the King's contemporaries. Mike Russell Smith.
And another very serious letter from Edna Smith, No Dog. Sir, my wife was to meet me last Monday by the Buttercross for lunch. A young man on the street gave me a flyer advertising a new noodle bar in town. The menu on offer looked good and tempting. My wife arrived with Murphy, our dog. She asked where we'd dine and looked at the flyer with me. She wondered if the noodle bar would let dogs in and asked the young man handing out the flyers, Do you let dogs in? Chicken, beef, no dog, came the reply. Right, we thought. He laughed. That was from Edna Smith, Maytree Close, Badger Farm.
This is a short letter with a lot of people signing it. Hello, the bins are still here, sir. Nearly 5 weeks ago, we wrote to the Chronicle about the bins blocking the pavement in Worthy Lane. Since the letter was published, we have heard nothing from either the City Council or the councillors, and the bins are still blocking the footpath. Can we conclude that the council spring clean and tidy is over? Nick and Caroline Dennis, Bill Hode and Ashlyn Hanning Lee, Steve and Judy Harborn, Bill and Debbie Farron Price, Sue and Andy Cole, Carol Smith and Jude Davis, Russell Pine and Jackie Thornton, Paul and Linda Mackey, Daniel Sanderson, Imogen Dawson, I beg her pardon, all of Worthy Lane, Hyde, Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you to all of our contributors. Now it's time for Your Say. With Brexit delayed until October, UK residents will have the chance to vote in the upcoming EU elections. We asked people what they thought, and Noel's got the answers.
Yes, I've got answers from four people. First, Derek Healy, 78, retired truck driver of Main Road, Coldon Common, said, "I've given up on the whole Brexit thing. I'm not going to vote if we're just leaving anyway." And Vic Harmon, 88, retired Royal Navy worker of Greenhill Road, Winchester, said, "I'll be voting. An election is an election. We have the chance to have our say." And Julie Woodnut, 66, retired teacher of Alsford Road, Winchester, said, "We are in the EU and I feel a European, so I'll be voting. I don't wish to leave. Let the show go on." And Ionis Ionides, 50, cultural experience manager of Winchester, said, "With the current state we're in, we should still have a say and a strong presence in the EU."
Now we're going back through the mist of time for historical news items from our files. And we'll start with 25 years ago with one read by Jane.
And 25 years ago was Friday, April the 15th, 1994. Labour councillor John Cline has decided to end a 21-year record of public service on Winchester City Council with a bitter attack on council officers and his political opponents. Last month's decision by the council voluntarily to privatise their housing management services was the last straw for the Labour veteran who has chaired Winchester's Housing Committee for the past 6 years. Mr. Cloyne believes his long-standing fight to provide council housing has been undermined by a combination of the Conservative government's attack on local government and council officers' wish to privatise the housing service by handling the management of Winchester's 6,000 council houses to an outside organisation. He was at the centre of furious exchanges at a March the 28th council meeting as the Conservatives and Liberal Democrats pushed ahead with the privatisation plans against Labour's insistence that the matter could be delayed until after the next general election. This way, the decision has been pursued with scant attention to the real arguments, the role of democratic local government in our community, and the implications of local government reorganisation is a sad reflection on the way Winchester City Council is run. I've had enough. First elected onto the council after the 1973 elections to represent the predominantly working class electorate of the Winnell area of Winchester, Mr. Cloyne has led the minority Labour group since 1980. And the second little item from 25 years ago is Winchester Magistrates Court is to close in March 1995 despite opposition from solicitors, police and the city's MP, Jerry Malone. On Monday, Hampshire Magistrates Courts Committee voted by a majority to go ahead with the proposed closure after a four-month public consultation period. Committee clerk Mike West admitted most of the representations were against the closure, but members decided to shut the single magistrates' courtroom at Winchester's Crown Court complex for economic efficiency and effectiveness reasons. Mr. Malone, MP for Winchester and Alton, has vowed it is not the end and intends to write to the Lord Chancellor. Winchester Police Chief Superintendent Giles Stogden said he was disgusted by the decision. The court costs the committee between £180,000 and £250,000 a year in running costs, including a substantial rates bill, utilities, security, repairs and maintenance. Mr. West said, "There is not a sufficient workload in that area to sustain an efficient magistrates' court. We have other court buildings with three or four courtrooms, such as Eastleigh, which has three rooms, which costs us around £45,000 a year." But he admitted that the future of the Eastleigh Magistrates Court was also uncertain, with the proposed development of a 12-room Magistrates Court complex in Southampton.
Let's go back 50 years now, please, Heather.
To Saturday, April the 19th, 1969. An old Cheriton housewife found a cigarette end in an eightpenny bag of chips. Soon after her complaint, a public health inspector visited the fish and chip shop in East Street, Alsford, and reported that 29 food hygiene regulations were being contravened. On Friday in last week, after a two-day hearing at Alsford, the proprietors were found guilty of 22 offences and fined a total of £167. Mrs. Sheila Smith of Two the Goodens, Old Cheriton, said she spat out the cigarette end and later handed it over to the Public Health Department of Winchester Rural District Council. A representative of the chip shop said, "I don't see how it got there. I think I got in after I served Mrs. Smith. I would have seen it as I scooped up the chips." The second item is, after the recent announcement of Winchester Chamber of Commerce's plans for this year's Festival Come Shopping Week, Winchester 69, the traders have already received an enthusiastic and enticing offer of participation from the International Wool Secretariat, Inventors of the Wool Mark. At a meeting in Winchester Guildhall on Friday of last week, an open session of traders and members of the Chamber of Commerce gave unanimous approval to the International Wool Secretariat cooperating in promoting Winchester 69, overall control remaining with the Chamber of Commerce.
It's taking us back 100 years.
Yes, two items from Saturday, April 12th, 1919. First item, a meeting under the auspices of the National Amalgamated Union of Shop Assistants, Warehousemen and Clerks was held on Wednesday evening at the Trades and Labour Club, High Street, Winchester. The notice invited every shop worker, all trades, all sections and both sexes, and such accommodation as the room afforded was crowded to the excess. The chairman, in his opening remarks, said that one of the objects of the Amalgamated Union of Shop Assistants was out to obtain the retention of 48 hours week for shop assistants. And the second one is, sad story, we regret to state that a motor accident attended by fatal consequences occurred shortly before 4 o'clock yesterday, Good Friday afternoon, on the London Road beyond Lunways Inn. A party of ladies and gentlemen were en route from London to Bournemouth in a Rover car to spend the Easter, and on reaching the hill on the Winchester side of the Mitchell-Deva turning, the car got out of control. It's believed a tyre burst and mounted the bank. The occupants, two ladies and three gentlemen, were all thrown out, and one, Miss Gertrude Byrne, a young lady aged 27, was pinned between the car and a tree and killed instantly.
Let's go back 200 years, Jane.
And 200 years ago was Monday, April the 12th, 1819. The Hampshire Hunt Spring Meeting took place last Wednesday on Worthy Down, which was more numerously and respectably attended than any previous occasion. Among those present were many of the nobility and gentry of the neighbourhood in splendid equipage. And secondly, on Easter Monday, William Dollar of the parish of Botley was convicted of cutting off the boughs of an oak tree with a billhook, having climbed the tree for the purpose.
This week's first person is written by Joanna Lewis, and it's read by Heather.
And it's called Toward the Fluffy Web. Stuck in traffic last week in Winchester, I was distracted by the sight of two fat, bald, middle-aged men strolling through town together. Why share that, I hear you ask, unless they were carrying a light aircraft and wearing hot pants? Alas, neither. So it's not the most exciting beginning, I concede, dear reader. However, I mention it because, though they were chatting intermittently, they were both texting the whole time. They held their phones with both hands just below their belly lines so they could screen read without wearing glasses. We've all been there. In fact, viewed from the back, I thought at first they were holding something quite different altogether, which is what caught my eye. As the car inched through town, I inadvertently stalked them. Not once did they look up at their surroundings. It was a timely reminder to me that whilst I often bemoan the younger generation for their Fortnite addiction, perma-headphones and Snapchat impertinence, many of us of a certain age may have also become inseparable from our smartphones. For example, I only remembered the incident of the men texting because that night I was lying in bed unable to sleep as my right thumb was vibrating. No laughing at the back, please. Why? Because although earlier I'd been watching TV for an hour, in reality I'd been scrolling. This was after a day of texting, juggling 5 minor domestic crises and then logging in my calorie intake on the Lose It app. I'd got scroller's thumb. Sounds like some horrible medieval affliction whose earliest known victim is a hod carrier called Three Fingers Bob. Nevertheless, I have strict rules about using the phone in the car, which I'm now thinking of extending to the house. I always put it in the glove compartment. Stuck in traffic, as is the lot of Wintonians these days, it's tempting to check who has just called. Is it finally the super vet offering my dream job of waking up dogs after their anaesthetic with a complimentary bacon sandwich? Oh, the sandwich is for me, by the way. Or perhaps it's the bodyguard's Richard Madden asking if he can come and do the garden in his gym jams. So I applaud Hampshire and Thames Valley Police for being the first to introduce devices that can track phone users in cars. I still see people using them, and it's infuriating. Nevertheless, the car aside, I think my smartphone use has got out of hand. Not quite the right phrase. I've secretly known for a while this isn't good for me. But my solution has involved using the phone even more. Take Twitter, which I joined recently. Initially, I followed a number of wildlife protection sites. So typically, I start the day with some hideous photo of a sperm whale being carved up by lots of grinning people. A suitcase of peeled pangolins, or the inside of a hedgehog. And that's without braving the latest from Leavers or Remainers, as my friends are divided down the middle. My antidote to this, inspired by the dark web, has been to create an alternative, the fluffy web. On another site, I can switch to Labradors wearing bow ties, or guinea pig gymkhanas. This morning, for example, I started the day galloping down a hillside in Devon with 200 freed donkeys. Don't knock it till you've tried it. Clearly, rationing our use of smartphones by switching them off or hiding them in a distant corner might be a worthwhile experiment. Of course, there are ever more functions smartphones can take on, which can save us money. But they're also potentially putting more humans out of a job. I've now got 5 exercise apps, including Teach Yourself Boxing. But it was only after working with a personal trainer for a month that I've lost half a stone. Did I need an app to tell me that? No, just my trousers.
But now for the editorial comment.
Yes, this is headlined a story of two revered institutions, two Winchester institutions in the spotlight in this week's Chronicle, one human, one institutional. The first institution in the news is the Hospital of St Cross, which has sparked a firestorm of protest with plans for parking on St Cross Park. In the last few days, more than 50 objections have gone into the City Council and more will follow, even though the hospital yesterday said it was withdrawing the scheme to allow it to consult the public. One might ask why it did not talk to local people before submitting the application. Another factor in fueling emotion is that the locals did not know of the plans, as the orange notices have reportedly only appeared in the last few days, something which needs looking into. The danger now is that it will be hard for a calm interchange of views that will lead the way to a sensible outcome. The human institution is Mike Sinker, the landlord of the Baker's Arms. He's retiring after a mind-boggling 46 years running the pub. At a rough estimate, that is calling time at the bar, please, ladies and gents, around 333,500 times, twice a day. If anyone deserves a pint, it's Mr. Sinker.
Over to Jane for question and answer, My Winchester.
And this week, that is David Hoggett, 56, retired, of Northbrook Avenue, St Giles Hill, who tells us what he thinks about Winchester. What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? Oh, the Black Rat on Wharf Hill for special occasions. But it was Sarah's to die for meals at the Eclipse before she sold last month. What is your favourite pub or bar? drinking Saxon bronze in the Black Boy is always heaven, but I also love the Hyde Tavern if walking a little further. What is your favourite shop? D&G Hardware on St George's Street, as they stock everything and are so helpful. What is your favourite building? The Black Boy, as the interior is so quirky and interesting. What is your favourite view? Looking at the South Downs National Park or town from St Giles's Hill. What is Winchester's biggest icon? Alfred's statue or Alfred's brewery? What is Winchester's best kept secret? The Dean Garnier Garden next to the cathedral. What is the best thing about Winchester? The wonderful charity work that goes on, like at the Winchester Wellbeing Lunch Clubs. And the worst? The one-way traffic system. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? Stop the council's fixation with ugly modern buildings and developments. Keep them small and in keeping. And describe Winchester in a sentence. A beautiful historic heaven we are all so lucky to live in.
For an alternative look at the news, because Heather's got Belgarum Diary.
And there are three items this week. The first is train spotters miss out. Hundreds of train spotters were left frustrated when a view of the famous Flying Scotsman was blocked by a regular train pulling into a station at the same time. Because the train had been delayed, the South Western Railway service from Cardiff to Southampton stopped at the exact moment the Scotsman came flying through. Around 200 enthusiasts had come for miles around to get a glimpse and photograph of the 96-year-old train. But they were left with pictures of standard livery of the South Western Railway's carriages instead. Photographer Mark Cross watched the blunder at Romsey Station at 10:20 a.m. on Friday. He said, "Well, as I waited, I joked, if it doesn't hurry up, another train's going to come. And then this train started to pull in. And lo and behold, there was a cloud of steam and the Flying Scotsman flew through." There were a lot of groans on the left platform. A lot of people were left disappointed. They'd been waiting there with their equipment, everyone set up to take pictures of the Scotsman. There were people with stepladders and everything. The video producer from Romsey added, "Well, it was over in seconds. The driver of the South West train probably got a bit of abuse. I felt rather sorry for everyone who missed out." And then there's Two into One. There are people who know how to drive and people who just follow the bonnet of their car. Stand by the two lanes of St George's Street in Winchester city centre and you can see them for yourselves. Drivers on that road, unless they're strangers to the city, know that at the end of the road, at the top of the rise, they turn either left to go onto the High Street or right to go along Drury Street, and most go left. Most drivers make their move into the suitable lane in good time. But there are some who thoughtlessly switch left at the last minute, and their queue jumping disrupts the smooth flow, as well as being rather selfish, as the more congested left hand is slower moving. So should drivers spread across two lanes going up St George's Street and then merge at the last minute, this would cut out the queue jumpers. But would it create more confusion and congestion back along the road? The key question is, which way would get people to their destination with less hassle, congestion and pollution? And the third item is tackling danger of pavement cycling. The most commonly broken law in Winchester? Riding a bike on the pavement along North Walls past the site of the former police station must be high on the list, especially now that the police station is a windswept expanse of concrete awaiting redevelopment by Southampton University. Cyclists coming from the Winnell area either have to go a tortuous route through the one-way system or else ride along the narrow pavement on North Walls before picking up the cycle path through North Walls Park. The Winchester Movement strategy wants to do more to boost cycling in the city. Well, it could certainly help cyclists and reduce the danger to pedestrians by creating a decent path through Derngate and Park Avenue. Much of the pavement there is quite wide. Then there is a stretch close to the terrace of 19th century houses that have little used front gardens, part of which could surely be purchased for a cycle pavement widening scheme.
It's time for What's On. We've got two things this week, and both at the Theatre Royal. On Wednesday, the 24th of April, the ex-English cricket captain, David Gower, is going to be talking about his life and his career. Then, on the 29th of April, Paul Merton's Impro Chums is on. Paul Merton is well known for Have I Got News For You? And he's joined by lots of other comics as well. For more details about this, you can go to the website of theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk or you can ring the box office, which is 01962, and I don't know what it is, actually. Just a minute, I'll find out for you. What is the box office? It is 01962 840440. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 19th of April at 6:02 a.m. and begins at 8:07 p.m. On Wednesday the 24th of April, it ends at 5:52 a.m. and begins at 8:16 p.m. If you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. If there's a problem with your Sovereign or Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. Continue with items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Jane.
And here we have appeal lodged over use of city centre GP surgery. An appeal has been lodged over a refusal to allow office use at city centre GP practice. It comes after Winchester City Council's planning committee threw out the bid last summer that would have seen the St Clement's building in Tanner Street changed to business uses that include offices, research and development or light industrial processes. Winchester City Council's planning committee heard fears from planning officers who recommended the bid be refused, that if it were to go ahead, it would result in the loss of a local facility. Commenting on the appeal, Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who owns the building, said, "The purpose of the application is to convert the St Clement surgery into offices was solely to give the building a viable use as and when, I stress, as and when, the 16,000 patient practice relocates to new premises on Upper Brook Street. It would be needless waste to leave the building sitting empty at Coitbury House and the Friars Gate surgery were for many years. Until such time as a sensible regeneration plan for the whole area is drawn up, either by the council or whoever, the building could be used as low-cost office space to be let typically to new and start-up businesses. Negotiations in respect of the new surgery appear to be making good progress, and I know that the practice and their patients are looking forward to a new building which will provide an extended range of facilities." Speaking at the time of the application, Councillor Gottlieb said, "As things stand, there is no proposal to develop the broader site, and unlike the council, I can't afford for the building to be sit vacant for years doing nothing. I'm not party to the discussions between the practice and the council, but I understand that the terms offered on the proposed new surgery on the Upper Brook Street car park are still not sufficiently attractive to persuade the practice to relocate. I've offered them a new long lease should they decide to stay put." I'm sure you will also recall Councillor Godfrey's reassurance given in November 2015 that the new surgery would be completed in August 2017. As previously reported, the proposal followed approval for plans to build a new city centre doctor's surgery for the St Clement's practice to relocate to and was expected to be completed by May 2019 before negotiations stalled. Since the refusal, the Chronicle has uncovered a bid by Councillor Gottlieb to sell the building to the City Council, although, as previously reported, the Council has refused to say whether or not it has agreed a deal.
scorcher expected this Easter weekend. It's going to be a scorcher. Hampshire residents can get set for blazing sunshine and temperatures hotter than Barcelona, Athens and Palma this bank holiday weekend. Forecasters predict that the mercury could top out at 21 degrees centigrade on the south coast on Saturday and Sunday, with slightly cooler temperatures on Friday and Monday. And while many Southampton football fans will be heading up to Newcastle to see Saints play at St James's Park, the warmest areas of the United Kingdom will be in the south. Good Friday will be pleasant, before the mercury rises to exceed 20 degrees centigrade, which equals 68 Fahrenheit, in areas on Saturday and Sunday, said forecaster Simon Partridge. Mr. Partridge said, after there was a chilly spell this weekend, we are going to see temperatures gradually increase through the week. The Easter and May bank holidays have also given residents the chance to boost their time off work. Research by ABTA, the Travel Agents Association, and a survey of more than 2,000 adults by YouGov shows that almost 6% of the United Kingdom population plans to take annual leave from work between the Easter bank holiday and May Day bank holiday, or travel with someone who has. Employees who usually work Monday to Friday and take 9 days leave between April the 19th and May the 6th will enjoy 18 days off, ABTA said. The extension of Brexit until October the 31st will prevent politics from complicating travel plans in the meantime, said ABTA. Mark Tanzer, its chief executive, said, people only have so much time off they can take from work, so it's no wonder the back-to-back bank holidays have appealed to so many this year.
The mystery of the disappearing bins. A Winchester man says he has been left without answers after capturing CCTV footage of a bin man throwing away his wheelie bin. Michael Druitt, 58, of Taplings Road, Week, installed the cameras outside his home after having four bins go missing in recent years. The property landlord said he assumed that they had been stolen until he saw that the fifth bin to go missing had been thrown into the back of a bin truck. The footage shows the second bin man collecting Mr. Druitt's bin before loading it onto the back of the truck to empty. Once back on the ground, the footage shows the bin man pick it back up and throw it into the back of the truck. Mr. Druitt said he called Biffer, who carry out the waste service on behalf of Winchester City Council, and was apparently told there was a fault with the bin. He said the operator's story that the bin lid was faulty was the reason why the bin was taken from my property. I believe this to be untrue, and the only reason the operator could come up with to partly excuse his conduct. However, the operator did not report the alleged faulty bin to the depot, which would have initiated a replacement, and consequently no replacement was provided. It's really quite bizarre. There was no problem with it whatsoever. Mr. Druitt said he was only reimbursed by Biffer for the last bin because he provided them with the CCTV footage. In total, he says, he has spent £109 on replacements. He added, the full CCTV footage clearly shows that the operator did not inspect the bin for any faults and just decided to throw the bin into the back of the truck. How many other residents have suffered the same fate from Biffer operators? A Winchester City Council spokesman said, we have spoken to the resident to offer our apologies and ensure a new bin has been provided. We raised this incident with our waste contractor Biffer, who undertook a full investigation into the matter. The incident comes as the City Council is reviewing its current waste contract. As previously reported, the City Council extended its contract with Biffer until April 2020, after it was announced the current partnership between the authority and East Hampshire District Council was ending this month. The temporary deal, announced by portfolio holder for Environment, Councillor Jan Warwick, in December, we'll see services maintained while civic chiefs seek a long-term arrangement. However, because of its short nature, the new deal will mean more of taxpayers' money will have to be spent. Speaking at the time, Councillor Warwick said, "We will be undertaking a procurement process where we'll be looking at an 8-year fixed price agreement with a provider and the very best deal for taxpayers. The extension for 1 year will cost the council more money due to its short-term span, and because it involves the new extra curbside glass collection initiative that has proved so popular with residents. However, we have undertaken comparisons with other authorities and what they pay for waste services and discovered the revised 1 year extension price will put us at midpoint cost-wise." Councillor Warwick said despite the increased cost, there were many positives to the temporary deal, including being able to work with refuse teams who know the area and who can implement our curbside glass collection smoothly. Biffer was asked for comment, but has yet to respond. And there is indeed a still from the CCTV footage of the incident in Taplings Road. It looks pretty indistinct at the moment, but if you look carefully, you can actually see a bin man throwing something into the back of a lorry.
And now we have Boomtown plan rebuffed by Park. Plans to give permanent permission for a music festival at the home of Boomtown have been rebuffed by councillors in favour of a temporary extension. Approval to use Matterley Estate near Winchester for the festival had been due to expire at the end of this year before the South Downs National Park Planning Committee unanimously granted the extension last Thursday. The decision now means the site can host the annual 65,000 capacity festival, as well as the Tough Mudder obstacle course on the Matterley Estate until the end of 2024. Committee members were keen to hold off on permanent permission over concerns around the impact Boomtown could be having on rare wildlife, with the compromise allowing some time to assess its impact, something a number of objectors raised during the meeting. Concerns were also raised about the length of the extension being too long, although Tim Slaney, Director of Planning, reassured members that was the right period to make the assessments. As previously reported, the application had proved to be highly controversial, with 53 letters of objection submitted, including several from parish councils and the Campaign to Protect Rural England. However, there were 126 letters of support, mostly from people living outside the area, who pointed out the economic boost for local shops and pubs. Peveril Bruce and his son Finn also told the meeting of the work Boomtown was doing to help local communities and charities, as well as other benefits to the national park, and said they were not aware of any adverse effect on wildlife, adding that they had worked to help the area's butterfly population. Speaking after the committee, Mr. Bruce said, "We will be working with the national park over the next 6 years to try to convince them there's nothing to fear. We want to look after the Matterley Estate. I'm not sure what everybody's worried about." This year's festival is set to run between August the 7th and August the 12th. Headliners include alternative hip-hop artists The Streets and punk rock duo Slaves.
Anger over lack of social homes in village scheme. Civic chiefs have reluctantly approved plans for 13 homes in Kingsworthy. The existing dwellings at 99, 101 and 103 Springvale Road will now be demolished and replaced with 6 2-bed, 4 3-bed and 3 4-bed houses. But Winchester Planning Committee members were unimpressed after hearing only £30,000 of the total sales would be given to the City Council's affordable housing scheme. Councillor Eileen Berry said that amount wouldn't even build one social home. Something tells me this is terribly wrong if we are not getting enough for one social home. Brian Estala, an agent at Savills, the company that will sell the properties developed by Shorewood Homes, told the meeting that the two-bedroom houses would start at around £400,000. She said the contribution to the council's scheme is reasonable in relation to the land. But Councillor Patrick Cunningham, who'd just used his calculator, responded, "Now, I've just done some quick maths, and it seems you'll be getting £7.25 million for the houses. Is the contributor not willing to pay us more than half of 1%? The plans included 15 properties when initially submitted in April 2018, but were altered before committee and were unanimously approved by 8 councillors. Councillor Cunningham said, "I am appalled, and I question the moral compass of the developer, but I regret to approve these plans." Councillor David McLean added, "It's a crying shame that a little bit more cannot be done to help our city build more affordable homes." Richard Wickens, director at Shorewood, said he was delighted that planning permission has been granted. "We have worked closely with the council over the last 12 months to develop a scheme that was brought to committee with a recommendation to approve. It is, however, disappointing that a debate surrounding affordable housing was held when this had already been discussed and agreed with the council and their external valuer. We're looking forward to starting on site this summer and building well-designed and attractive family homes."
"I can't serve on this jury. I'm the judge." A senior judge has revealed that he was called for jury service and was only excused when he insisted that he was actually going to sit as the judge in the case. Judge Keith Cutler, the recorder of Winchester since 2009, told a jury of his surprise when he was called upon to do his public duty as a juror. Speaking at Salisbury Crown Court, the senior circuit judge said that even though he replied to the summons stating that he was the judge in the trial, his reason was rejected and he had to contact the jury's central summoning bureau directly. He said, "I was selected for jury service here at the Salisbury Crown Court for a trial starting 23rd of April. I told the jury's central summoning bureau that I thought it would be inappropriate seeing I happened to be the judge and knew all the papers. They wrote back to me. They picked up the fact that I was the judge, but said, 'Your appeal for refusal has been rejected, but you should apply to the resident judge.' But I told them I am the resident judge. I had to phone them up and they realised it was a mistake." Judge Cutler, who served as the coroner for the inquest of Mark Duggan, who was shot by police in August 2011, who has also served as president of the Council of Circuit Judges, said he would have been happy to have served as a juror if it had been appropriate. He said, "I would have liked to have done the jury service to see what it was like and whether I would have liked the judge." A guide to jury summons issued by the Department of Justice says the normal expectation is that everyone summoned for jury service will serve at the time for which they are summoned. However, it is recognised that there will be occasions when it is not reasonable for a person to serve at the time for which they are summoned.
And here we have Girl Power Thrives in Winchester Athletics. Judy Murray, mother of Grand Slam tennis champions Jamie and Andy, had a three-word answer when asked earlier this month for advice on attracting more girls and women into sport. "Fun, friends, fitness," she said. Murray had been speaking at a conference with new sports minister Mims Davies, who is also the MP for Eastleigh and just happens to have one of the country's most inspiring and inclusive examples of those principles right on her doorstep. Winchester and City District Athletics Club has grown over the past decade to become not just the fifth biggest athletics club in the entire country with 930 members, but with more than 400 women and girls, one of the largest mixed sports organisations for female participation. A tangible sense of team spirit is evident throughout the age groups and has been crucial for the club's success in keeping girls and young women involved in athletics. The Under 11 Academy section, led by Becca Lurcock, has recently introduced some girls-only training sessions and special games and pizza social nights to get to know each other off the track as well as on it. And this is accompanied by a photograph of a very large group of enthusiastic-looking girls and young women waiting outside to get on with their athletics.
Meet Peter, Marwell Zoo's newest resident. And there's a picture of one of those lovely little red pandas to accompany this article. He's gazing out at us, looking rather confused. A new red panda has arrived at Marwell Zoo as part of a new breeding programme. The three-year-old male arrived from Geyer Zoo in the Netherlands as part of the European Endangered Species Breeding Programme. The red panda, named Peter, has now joined the zoo's female resident red panda, Mai Mai, in a new enclosure. Marwell keeper Carrie Arnold said, "Peter has settled in really well to his new home with Mai Mai. They don't seem fazed by one another, and Peter has done a lot of relaxing and snoozing, which is what we'd expected. Red panda breed once a year, between January and mid-March, so we're not anticipating any panda cubs soon, but we're obviously hopeful for the future. The new enclosure has been specially designed by Marwell's keepers and landscape teams to replicate the endangered red panda's natural habitats in Nepal, India and Bhutan, as well as China and Myanmar. With three different areas to explore, Mai Mai and Peter's new enclosure features lots of planted bamboo and thick, low-lying bushes, as well as both coniferous and deciduous trees to keep them both content all year round. To give Marwell Zoo visitors the best chance to see the pair, the new home also has multi-level viewing windows, as well as climbing structures for the pandas to pass people overhead.
Triple header of town heritage. This Saturday sees the launch of the first of the Alresford Heritage Days, in which three historical attractions will be open to the public from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. The old fire station at the bottom of Broad Street now houses the town's museum and is home to the old steamer fire engine and other historic artefacts. It also tells the story of Alresford through the ages. It will be formally opened by Steve Bryan, MP, at 11 a.m. on Easter Saturday, April the 20th. Mr. Bryan will also visit the two other attractions, the 12th century Norman Bridge and the 19th century Eel House straddling the River Aire. The bridge is one of Alresford's hidden secrets, and while it is immediately outside the new museum, it is hidden below the road. Access to the bridge is from Mill Hill. Roy Gentry, town trustee and chairman of the museum committee, said, "Following a recent agreement with Artworthy Framing, the existing tenant at the old fire station, who will continue to trade there, the museum will be doubled in size next year." An added attraction on the day will be a French market at the top of Broad Street. All three attractions will be open for a further 5 days during the course of the year, but it is hoped that the museum will be open more frequently during the year, but this is subject to the available of volunteers. And there's a nice picture of the polished old steamer fire engine looking glistening gold. Is it gold or brass? No, it's brass, obviously. And big with big red wheels at the old fire station.
And he has an extraordinary plan for a unique house which has been submitted. The location of a floating home near Alresford has been revealed after a planning application was submitted. It comes after Winchester-based architects AR Design Studio floated the plans, the Water Lily House, at a disused reservoir that once served the surrounding fields. A spokesman declined to disclose the location, which has now been revealed as Fobdown Farm off Abbotstone Road. As previously reported, the design has been derived from the initial concept of a floating lily pad. Architects say that because of the lack of biodiversity on the reservoir, the design team saw an opportunity to turn the lake into an asset. The scheme has also been designed to copy the benefits of water lilies by casting shade, helping to give algae growth down and giving shelter from both the sun and predators to the pond life. It would also give the occupants 360-degree panoramic views of the area, taking in the lake and the open countryside. A decision on the plans is expected by May the 1st, and so far no objections have been lodged. And this is accompanied by the most extraordinary photograph, literally, of a large area of wood which has the building on it, five rooms, separate block of rooms, looking a bit like a water lily leaf. They have green roofs and all the rooms overlook the water and on which it is literally floating, and the greenery beyond.
New wheels for the Harriers, and there's a photograph of about 20 people in wheelchairs, all looking pretty pleased. Delighted members of the Hampshire Harriers wheelchair basketball team will receive specially designed sports car chairs courtesy of a £5,000 donation from the Eight Foundation. Two members of the Hampshire Harriers will receive new chairs, and they'll be in the best position to help maintain the team's premier status in the Great Britain Wheelchair Basketball Association League. Sam Hill, aged 18, and Tanya Surtees, 28, have been playing for the club for the past 4 years and now have specially designed wheelchairs with indoor tyres, fixed frames and bumper bars just for the basketball. The Southampton-based club, which has been running for over 30 years, promotes and supports wheelchair basketball, not only for competition, but also because it improves the general fitness of its players, who are aged from 14 to 72 years old. The club's two teams are currently flying high at the top of their leagues, National Division 3 and Division 4 Southwest.
Campaign launch for Statue of Licorice in Winchester. The campaign to celebrate the Jewish Winchester businesswoman Licorice has taken a step forward. The leader of Hampshire County Council, Roy Perry, unveiled the maquette of the proposed statue, created by an internationally renowned sculptor, Ian Rank Broadley, in London last Thursday. Licorice was an outstanding Jewish medieval businesswoman who moved in high society but was murdered in the city. Winchester's Jewish community is raising funds for the statue to be placed outside the Discovery Centre on Jury Street, near the heart of the Jewish quarter. They hope it will raise awareness of the city's Jewish links, promote religious tolerance, enhance the city of Winchester, and commemorate a woman of national significance. The unveiling of the maquette marked the official full launch of the Licorice of Winchester statue appeal, led by its patron, Simon Sebag Montefiore, historian, television presenter and author. Mr. Sebag Montefiore said, "The statue will be an important link for Winchester with its royal past and medieval Jewish community, and be a beacon of religious tolerance and diversity." The sculptor, Mr. Rank Broadley, said, "The opportunity to create a work of sculpture to celebrate Licorice of Winchester was one I readily undertook. The sighting of the life-size bronze sculpture near the location of her historic home brings the past and future together. It recognises the enormous contribution made by the Jewish community to English life and serves to inspire us today." Licorice was murdered in 1277, a killing that was never solved. She was a highly educated wife and mother and raised funds for Henry III and Queen Eleanor, as well as a number of national and local projects, including Hyde Abbey, the Great Hall and Winchester Abbey, Westminster Abbey. And there is a picture of the sculptor and Roy Perry looking at the maquette of Licorice, which looks quite inspiring, actually.
And here we have first woman bishop in the diocese. Debbie Sellin is set to become the first woman to be the Bishop of Southampton and the first woman to be a bishop in the Diocese of Winchester. Downing Street made the announcement on Tuesday that the Reverend Canon Deborah Sellin will be the next Bishop of Southampton. Ordained 12 years ago, she is currently the Vicar of St John the Baptist, Wanesh with Blackheath in the Diocese of Guildford, and is also the area dean for Cranleigh. She succeeds the Right Reverend Dr. Jonathan Frost, who moved on to become Dean of York in January after over 8 years' service. Bishop-elect Debbie said, "I am thrilled and honoured to be nominated as the first woman to be the Bishop of Southampton. It is a real joy to have the opportunity to support the many churches, parish communities and schools in their work to spread the Christian message." The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, said, "I am delighted. Over the past few years, our diocese has begun to refocus our attention on our Christian mission, and most recently, through Winchester Mission Action, our plan is to engage with the missing generations of young people across Hampshire and East Dorset." She takes up her role in July.
Christian climate change campaigners stride along the River Itchen. Charity campaigners dedicated their Saturday to Christian aid, starting at the Eastley branch of HSBC and walking 8 miles up the Itchen to the Winchester branch, urging the bank to stop financing climate-wrecking fossil fuels. The five campaigners, four humans and one very keen dog, were part of a national action by Christian Aid to visit branches across the country, calling on the Global Bank to abide by the Paris Agreement's target of keeping the global warming rise within 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial temperatures. The campaigners delivered a letter to the branch staff to forward to HSBC CEO John Flint and a petition urging it to invest in clean energy. Campaigner Sarah Wake said, "These are exceptional times. We've sat back and expected other people to tackle climate change for too long. Christian Aid's Lent and Easter appeal is called Rise Up. And as the waters rise around the world, we have to rise up and speak for all those people whose livelihoods are being destroyed."
Concludes the extracts for the week ending 18th of April. Thank you to our editors Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Jane Thomas. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.